title of the message today, Running for Your Life. Running for Your Life. Now, I know that I'm as old as dirt. How many of you remember the TV program Run for Your Life? Rest of you are lying. Ben Gazzara. I mean, they had people chasing him, and he was always trying to help somebody, and he was trying to just stay one step ahead of the law. And I remember that as a kid. I don't remember what night it came on. Friday night, I remember. Friday night, it was a good night. That was the Wild Wild West and the Man from U.N.C.L.E. I mean, I love that Friday night. I don't remember when Run for Your Life came on, but I'm just remembering the program. That's the title of the message today. All of us have had a fear, or we've been scared at some point in our life. All of us. Does not matter who it is here today. At some point in your life, you have had fear about something. You say, how do you know? Because it's a part of the human condition. Every human has a fear. Sometimes it is a fear that is made up. Sometimes it is an actual fear. I know as a kid, I used to not really, I love movies, but there were some movies that I would not go see. Now, I'd go watch Frankenstein. I'd watch The Mummy. But you couldn't get me to go see Dracula. And the reason is because he could get into locked rooms. He could transform himself from a vampire to a bat or to a wolf. And you can't outrun a bat. You can't outrun a wolf. Now, Frankenstein, I could beat him every day and twice on Sunday. But you couldn't beat Dracula. And so I wouldn't go. I wouldn't see that because it spooked me. It really did. And I use that word spook because it's funny because at our house, our granddaughter Isabella, back when she was about five, if something scared her, she didn't say it was spooky. She said it was smooky. And so at our house, it's like, oh, that's smooky right there. That's smooky. But we've all been scared about different things. Now, to be honest with you, I don't know what the scaredest that I have ever been. I really don't. I know that my heart dropped the first time I was on an airplane and they backed the engines down when they were starting to come in for the descent. I didn't know that's what they did. And all of a sudden, that engine's humming along, like, then it goes, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? You know, because I'm already on high alert. And so that was a little disconcerting. I remember one time I had been hunting. I used to love to go hunt the woods, and usually it was rabbits and squirrels. I never went deer hunting when I was a kid, but I used to love to go hunting. We'd shoot quail and that kind of thing. And I remember I was coming out of the woods way down below my grandmother's house, and my grandmother and grandfather, they had probably about 120 acres, and so I tromped through those woods my whole life. And so I came out onto the dirt road. Now, they didn't have street lights like we do in our neighborhoods, all right? I mean, it was dark, and it was dark 30. So I'm unloading my shotgun, putting the shells in my pocket. I got that gun on my shoulder, and I'm walking down the dirt road back toward the house, probably about half a mile to the house. And all of a sudden, I'm next to a fence row. And when I got next to a certain part of that fence row, a covey of quail flushed. And it was, but it was loud. I'm talking about my heart dropped. I'm 14, 15 years old. I've unloaded my gun. That might have been a good thing. I would have been emptying that thing, whatever the noise was. Scared me bad. But I don't know if I've had anything that has spooked me a little more than something that happened the last time I was in Israel. And some of the folks that went on this last trip that I went on, you know what I'm about to probably say. It was at Christmas time, and We talk about a particular city at Christmas time. You know what that city's called? Bethlehem. Well, we have all of these warm, fuzzy feelings. But Bethlehem today is under Palestinian control. It is not Jewish control. It's under Palestinian control. And so they were going to put on a Christmas program in Bethlehem. And so we had about 70 or 80 people that had gone, and we'd kind of made our way in, and we had gotten settled. And we're kind of looking around, and basically we're different than what everybody else looks like. They got turbans on, you know, and all of a sudden, when it gets dark, they're not singing Away in a Manger. They're not singing Old Little Town of Bethlehem. They are beginning to talk politics. You say, do you speak Arabic? No, but you know what's happening. And the next thing I know, behind us, and Deb is sitting next to me, and behind us, there's a guy, and he's screaming, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. And I'm thinking, we got to get out of Dodge. And I'm telling you, when we finally made the move to get out, it was an ordeal getting out. You had people, you know, screaming at people. Not at them, screaming at themselves, but screaming at like our group. You know, like, what are you doing here? And it was like, we're the infidels. And I'm thinking, we got to get on them buses and get down the road. That was a little disconcerting. And you've had things happen like that. I'll tell you something else that causes me a little concern today. AI. I mentioned this on Wednesday. I'm a little concerned about some of the AI stuff that's going on. I heard something, and I guess this is humorous. I told a Sunday school class about it. Nike shoes. In 2028, they're going to be trying to release and come out with a robotic shoe. Now, you think about that a moment. You think about, you put on some shoes, and they said that part of it will be where that it straps like up your leg. And it's supposedly going to help you run faster and jump higher. I don't think I'm going to be buying them shoes. I don't need to run faster. I don't need to jump higher. But imagine somebody puts a pair of those things on, and the next thing you know, they throw their hip out of joint. The next thing you know, they done crash their head into something because they couldn't stop. They run into a car that's driving by itself. That's another AI thing that Elon's got up his sleeve. How many of you, with the ability that you have right now, can really tell the difference between an original picture and an AI picture? Can you? I can't. Now, there may be some computer nerd among these kids over here that can, but I'm telling you right now, they've got things that are happening right now with artificial intelligence. It's a little smooky. It's a little smooky. And so today, how do we handle that? Well, I want to just preach for a little bit, and I hope it'll be a source of encouragement for you. I want us to notice, first of all, that fears are from everywhere. They're from everywhere. Now, the first set of fears that we're going to think about, we're going to think about the fears that are without. We could say the things that are outside of the doors of the church, the things that are outside of the doors of our home. We have those fears that are out there. So what are some things in David's life? I think they could have probably named the character in Run for Your Life. They could have probably named him David. All right? And so let's just think about Saul. Saul is the king. Started off great. He didn't really want to be the king, but he was head and shoulders above everybody else in the whole nation. He's the tallest guy. Maybe he was the best looking guy. He's the king. And so he was chosen to be the king. But as the years clicked along, there's another guy that comes onto the scene, and his name is David. Now, David gets to know the king in a couple of different ways. First of all, the king has fits of madness. Now, they didn't have Xanax that they could give to the king in those days. They didn't have any other pills. They didn't really have any type of medication other than to get drunk. They didn't really have anything. But one of the things that they did have is they had people that could play musical instruments. And evidently, there was nobody that was better than a young boy named David. And so David comes and he begins to plunk that harp. And he begins to make this music. And Saul's disposition just began to be calm. It's like the old thing about music that soothes a savage beast. And so you've got David and he's introduced now. Saul probably does not really remember him. The only thing he knows is off to the side, I hear this beautiful harp music that's playing, and he begins to calm down. But then a little bit of time passes, and there's a war. There's a battle that's going on in what's called the Valley of Elah. I've been to this valley. I've picked up rocks from this valley and brought them home. You say, why do you do that? Because it's cheaper than buying gifts if you just get rocks. I've done that the last couple of times I've been. It's amazing how much money you can save by just getting rocks. Now, you got to be careful because they may confiscate them when you're going through customs. So you got to hide them good. I'm not telling you to smuggle, but I'm just telling you, you got to hide them good. And so you've got these people at the Valley of Elah. One side you've got the Philistines. One side you've got Israel. For 40 days... the giant Goliath has come down to the Valley of Elah right in the middle. Send me your champion. Let me and him fight. If he wins, we will serve you. If I win, you'll serve us. And nobody moves. Now, Saul is the logical choice because he's head and shoulders above everybody else. Well, now you go back to young David. He's not even at the war to begin with. He's got brothers that are there. And his daddy, whose name is Jesse, says, hey, boy, come here. I got some bread and some cheese I want you to take to your brothers. They're probably getting hungry. I want you to take these provisions to them. So he makes his way to the Valley of Elah. He leaves the sheep with another shepherd. He gets over there and he goes, hey, how's it going, guys? What do you mean? How's it going? I mean, are we winning this battle? And there's nothing happening. And finally, Goliath comes out as David is standing there, and he hears this, and he's looking around going, how come nobody's moving? And he goes, what's the matter? How come nobody's going to fight him? And his brother's like, shut up, you're just a punk kid. And David goes, is there not a cause? I'll go. Saul hears about it. He goes out, tries to give David his armor, wouldn't have it, doesn't fit. He goes out with a slingshot and picks up 5 smooth stones. You say, why 5? Goliath had 4 brothers is the best thing that I can come up with. If all 5 of them wanted to do business, David would do business with them. He kills Goliath. Now, I think that he was killed with the rock that hit him between the eyes. But just to show everybody that he wasn't just knocked out, he took the giant's own sword and cut his head off with him and held it up. And everybody's, yeah, yeah, yeah. And the people in Israel, they begin to get juiced. I mean, it's like a football player picking up a fumble, and all of a sudden his teammates are like, yeah. Happened yesterday in a ball game. Alabama's fortunate to win that game yesterday. But they won it. But you multiply that type of intensity, which is life and death, unlike a football game, by 1,000. And they begin chasing Philistines, killing Philistines. And by the time they get back, the gals in town are causing trouble. You know why they're causing trouble? Because this is what they're singing. Saul has slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s. Saul's the king. He's the big cheese. That's what my two older grandkids used to say about me. They would say, yeah, Papa's the big cheese. I'm thinking, he's not even a little cheese. And so these people are winning this battle, and they're now there's praising David, and Saul can't take it. And the next thing you know, he's thinking, I've got to get rid of him. And I've got to move my sermon right along, but basically there's at least, and I've heard people say as many as 30, I can give you 11. I can give you 11 different times scripturally where that Saul tried to have David killed, assassinated, murdered, whatever word you want to use. I can give you 11. There's others that say that, you know, when you look at this verse and that verse, you can come up with 30. 11's a pretty good number. And so, what about Saul? He's from without. He's not in David's family. He doesn't belong to Jesse. He wasn't Uncle Saul. Who else? Well, when David begins to run for his life, where does he go? He goes into an area that is known as Moab, which was a pagan land, a lot of Philistines that was there. And there was a king of one of the Philistine cities, Gath, and his name was Achish. Now, who had killed the champion of the Philistines? David. Whose reputation had preceded him when he would go places? David. But David is so fearful of Saul that he runs into a Philistine city, Gath. And all of a sudden people are going, isn't that David? Isn't he the one that killed Goliath? Isn't he the enemy of the Philistines? And David begins to hear whispers of that. And then all of a sudden he goes, they're going to kill me here. And so in those ancient times, if someone was thought to be insane, nobody would bother them because they didn't want to ruffle the gods, because the gods supposedly would frown upon that. And so David began to feign insanity. I've often wondered if I could do this. Probably couldn't, because I don't have a beard. But let me tell you what he began to do. He began to like scratch the walls. He began to drool. We would say foam at the mouth. He began to have spittle. That's a Greek word which means spit. Began to have that spittle come down, and it just dripping there. All of a sudden, he's got this crazy look on his face. And Achish goes, what's the matter with him? We think he's touched. And then his men are going, kill him! Kill him! And he goes, uh-uh. He's crazy. I don't want the gods on my case. And so David is able to escape. Those are the fears without. But what about when the fears come from within? When they come from within, what do you have? You've got his own son, Absalom. Now, we'll not turn to it, but you can write the passages down there. Several years ago, I preached through 1 and 2 Samuel. I think they're probably still on the internet. In chapter 15 through 18, you read the story of Absalom. David loved that boy. Oh, I'm telling you, he wept after Absalom had been trying to kill him. When Joab killed Absalom, he was heartbroken over that. Absalom, Absalom, oh my soul, Absalom, would to God I had died for thee. That was the heart of David to a son that wanted to murder his father. Absalom is thinking, he's an old man. I'll take his place. Can you think of anything that is more heart-rending or when a kid turns their back on a parent? I can't. I've heard of kids that maybe if a parent was of a political persuasion and the kid was of a different persuasion, that they would not even speak to parents. How awful is that? I've known of people that would not go to a funeral because they disagreed with the deceased over something like politics. Put that to the side during a time like that. Go, pay your respects, remember the good things, and just try to remember the joyous times and not that you got an axe to grind. Put that stuff aside. But Absalom wanted to kill his own father. What about Ahithophel? Old David, man, he loved that old man. Ahithophel was his most trusted counselor. I mean, you talk about listening to somebody. When David had to make a decision, what does Ahithophel think? He thinks that, so do I. David called him the oracle of God. I mean, when Ahithophel spoke, it was as God Almighty was speaking through his lips. That is how much confidence David had in this old man. But when you read about Ahithophel in 1 Samuel 15, you find that when that rebellion of Absalom takes place, it says this, that Ahithophel was with them. So Ahithophel is now turned his back on David. Why did he do that? Because of David's sin? Do two sins justify the second? No. Just like two wrongs don't make a right? What was David's sin? Do you remember the dividing line in David's life? The name is Bathsheba. Before Bathsheba, God always seemed to have first place in David. He was always doing the right thing. But then when he missed that time when kings went forth to battle, he commits adultery. Ultimately, he commits murder. Did you know that Bathsheba was Ahithophel's granddaughter? He has disrespected my granddaughter. I won't be his friend any longer. And he turned his back on David because of that. But he was the most trusted of all of the counselors. And so there was that fear that comes within. And there are times in our lives when the treason of a friend strikes really, really hard. When you have somebody that is extremely close to you, we've got some people here, and you've gone through a divorce. And what you went through was this. Someone that you had committed your life to, they broke the trust by being unfaithful. And the breach was not able to be healed. And the person that you one time loved with your whole heart, now you can't even stand to be in their sight. There's a fear that comes from the inside. I got to move along. Number two, not only do we see the fear that's from everywhere, but I want you to notice there's a forging of outcast. If you want to turn to it, you can. And excuse me, in 1 Samuel 22 and verse 2, it says this. It says that every one that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented. You had those that were distressed, those that were in debt, those that were discontent. What did they do? They gathered themselves unto him. The him there is David. So what happened was David had begun to run. The word had gotten out. Samuel said, this boy, he'll be king. Jonathan knew that. Jonathan was Saul's son. We read about that in 1 Samuel, I think it's 17 or 18. And so you've got these people, and they are the outcasts. They're not the upper echelon of Israel. We would consider these people to be a lower rung, a lower class of people. These are people that had trouble. And so what did they do? They came to David. They knew that he had been a shepherd, and everything that he'd ever done, even his service to Saul, he had done that with a love for the whole nation. And they knew that, and they thought, well, maybe he can help us. Ultimately, you'll find as you keep reading and studying Samuel, you'll find that David ends up with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people just like this. Not only do the people come, but sometimes their wives and their children are in tow. I think about the ones that were in debt. Perhaps somebody foreclosed on their little piece of land. They have no place to go. So what do? They come and they say, we got no place to go. Can we hang out with you? And so David ultimately begins to be responsible literally for several thousands of people. He has the people that are in need. Can I tell you that this is what this church is supposed to be? It's supposed to be a place where the outcast, those that are distressed in their life, those that are under the debt of sin, those that are just being financially squashed, those people that are not happy with how their life is going, this is supposed to be a place where they can get answers. This is supposed to be a place that they can call home. That used to be one of the mottos that we used, Corinth, a great place to belong. And I've had people tell me over the years, the greatest mistake that they ever made was when they moved their membership. Whenever maybe they moved towns or whatever, some of them didn't move anywhere. They just moved their membership. And they say the greatest mistake they ever made was changing memberships. Now there'll be 47 other people say, oh, do it. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, I should have never made that choice. And so you've got these people and they have come and David gives them a place of help. God has a place and it's called the church. It's not a civic club. It's not a community group. It's the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth, which is what Paul told young Timothy. If the church is not the place, there is no place. Let me say that again. If the church is not the place, there is no place. Because you don't read about any other place in the Word of God in the New Testament, except the church. And so, the forging of the outcast. Number three, I want you to look now. This is our text verse. Look at chapter 23 and verse 14. I love this verse. It says, and David abode in the wilderness in strongholds. That meant that he was living kind of up in the mountains, up in the caves. There was several of these that he would go to from place to place to place. In Israel, there is a place that is called En Gedi. And that is where he was at when one of the times when Saul was camped down below. David and his men are up in these caves and they're just kind of looking down out of the darkness. Nobody knows they're up there. And Saul, basically the Bible says that he went to cover his feet. That's a euphemism for meaning he's going to the bathroom. He goes up into that cave. He begins to do his business. He decides, you know what, it's cool in here. I think I'll just go over here and lay down a minute. So he goes over and he lays down, and while he's asleep, David slips up and his men are going, "Kill him, kill him, kill him." And David's going, "No, I won't touch God's anointed." He knew that Saul had been placed there by God, and he knew that one day God would take him down, but he wasn't going to do it. And so he cuts a little piece of the king's robe off. Saul gets up from his nap, goes down. David steps out and tries to let him know that he could have killed him, and he didn't. And he says, and Saul says this, "You're more righteous than I am." And you know what Saul did next? Kept trying to kill him. David could have killed him at least twice. One time in the cave, one time Saul is sleeping in a trench. And David and one of his men go through the camp of Saul. They take the water jug. They're like, could have got him again, but he didn't. Look at our text again. You've got David and he's staying in these places. And it says, and remained in the mountain in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day. He was running for his life every single day. But then notice this last phrase. But God delivered him not into his hand. God would not let Saul get David. There is no greater protection for you in your life than the Lord. You say, I don't know about that. I mean, I got to have that 30-30 right by my door. I got to have that 45 right next to my bed. Don't have a problem in the world with you arming yourself. I love the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment was not to shoot squirrels. I love the Second Amendment. But let me tell you something. If God's not protecting you, that's not going to help you. Gun will jam. Bullet won't fire. You better have the protecting hand of God upon you. I just thought of this. Friday morning, this is why you didn't get a Friday blast. You got a Friday blast, you didn't get a blog. Normally I'm writing it during this time. My wife goes, "We need to take grandkids to IHOP. You got to do the Friday blast today?" Well, I don't have to. Let's go to the IHOP. Let's take the girls. We leave there. We run a couple of other errands. And one thing that we do is we go into Hobby Lobby. Don't really have a whole lot I need to buy in Hobby Lobby, but you women do. So I'm walking and I tell Iz this. No, this is out of John's supermarket. We hadn't got to Hobby Lobby yet. This is John's. And I said, "You get AJ's hand." I said, "Now don't hold her finger, hold her wrist." And I said, "Now give me your hand." And I grabbed her wrist. And I said, "I used to do this with your mother." I said, "Now take my finger and you hold on to my finger." And she would say, "Okay." And I said, "That's not the way we're doing this." I said, "If you've got my finger, then you're the one that's in control and you're the one that is making the decision." And I said, "If you make a bad one, then it could be trouble." I said, "So this is how we're doing it." So I said, "Now let go." And I reached over and I grabbed her hand and I grabbed her wrist. And I said, "Now you do AJ the same way." And I said, "Now we walk. And if somebody was backing out, they don't get to get freaked and run. No, I got her hand. She's not going anywhere. If they're holding on, they can." Can I tell you the same thing that I told her? I said, "You see my hand right there, baby? As powerful as my hand was holding your wrist, we are in God's hand right there." And I said, if God's got us in his hand, just like the old song says, he's got the whole world in his hands. If he's got us right there, you're good. You're good. And so, but God delivered him not into his hand. The his there is Saul. David was protected. He wasn't sure he was always going to be. I mean, he was running and running and running. It's like the old thing about when Yasser Arafat was alive, said he never slept in the same bed twice. Because he didn't know when the Israelis were going to get him. Well, God was protecting him. And he slept in a different ditch or a different cave all the time until he actually became king. And so we see the faithfulness of God. Now, what are some takeaways? Let me give you three. We all have fears. If you don't have fear, you're not normal. You're a psychopath. You say, well, I don't appreciate being called a psychopath. Then get a fear. They just arrive, but they come in different packages. It may be that one package is a letter from the bank saying that you're overdrawn. It may be that it's a phone call from a doctor's office. That's a package that none of us like. It could be that you get a call from the school and something's happened to a child or a grandchild. You just don't ever know. The fear can crop up in a lot of different areas. None of us are excluded. But if you look at the second thing is, he needed others. Do you know how David constantly protected the people of Israel? Because he had 600 men at one time that were distressed, that were debtors, that were discontented. They didn't like what Saul was trying to do to someone that had been a hero by killing the giant and by winning these other battles for Saul. And then all of a sudden, because he couldn't take the song about his thousands and David's 10,000s, they're going, that's not right. And so they come and they align themselves with David. David could not have won those battles over the Philistines protecting Israel had those 600 men not showed up. And you need other people too. When you look through the church directory, there are people that are in that directory and they have maladies now and they can't come, but can I tell you they still need you to talk to them? They still need you to contact them. I'm telling you, I love it when I hear this. I've had family members of some of our senior ladies that are widows that are now in homes. Their family members have told me, you just do not know how much it means to my mom when she gets these cards and these letters from these other ladies in the church. It makes her day. She keeps them there and she just reads them over and over again. Why is that? Because they need somebody. They need you. And if they can't come, then you can go to them. There are people that may be listening to this morning. And they're members of this church. If they are physically able, they ought to have been in this church today. I don't apologize for saying that. If you are not physically infirmed, you ought to be in God's house. That's just the bottom line. That's biblical. We need other people. We need other people not just on Sundays, but we need other people during the week. There are times when somebody just needs you to come along beside of them, put your arm around them and say, listen, let's pray together. You need each other. We are social beings. David needed those 600 men, probably needed those women with the cooking. Nobody wants to eat a guy's cooking all the time. And so you've got that group of outcasts, and they bless David. They help protect David. The last thing is this. He knew where to flee. Psalm 11, verse 1, it talks about fleeing to the Lord. Now, some of you have heard the name John Wesley. John Wesley was the founder of the Methodist Church. Last word I got, John Wesley was turning over in his grave with some of the stuff that's going on now. But when he founded that denomination, basically it was a bunch of outcasts. Well, he had a baby brother. And his baby brother was named Charles. Now, John is the most well-known. Charles is the second most well-known. And they had 15 other siblings. Susanna Wesley, I think she had 17 kids. That's a bunch. I mean, when Debbie and I had three, it was like, how are we going to afford this? But they had 17 of them. Now, I know it was a whole different era, and they didn't have television. I understand. All right? But biology was biology back then, just like it is now. Thank the Lord you got a television. And so you've got these two boys, John and Charles. They're believers, just like their siblings were. It's just we know about them. Charles Wesley was not so much a preacher as he was a songwriter. And he wrote a hymn in 1740. You see it on the... Now, this is not the whole hymn. I just cherry-picked some of the words because I couldn't get it on there and you read it. I'd have had to put it like a 5 font and you'd have all been going, what does that say? So I put it up there and this is what it says. Jesus, lover of my soul, let me to thy bosom fly. Now, why did he have that phrase there? Well, first of all, the passage in Psalms. But this happened to his brother, his older brother, John. You know, John Wesley, he rode 250,000 miles on a horse to preach at different places. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles on a horse. And one day while he was riding that horse, there was a little bird that was being chased by a hawk. And that bird was moving back and forth and the hawk was trying to get it. And then all of a sudden, that bird, that little sparrow type bird, he left the sky and went right into John Wesley's coat. And the hawk could do nothing. He wrote this song because of what happened to his brother. Jesus, lover of my soul, let me to thy bosom fly. While the nearer waters roll, while the tempest is high. Oh, my Savior, hide till the storm of life is past. Other refuge have I none. Hangs my helpless soul on thee. Let the healing springs abound. Make and keep me pure within. Thou of life, the fountain art, freely let me take of thee. That's the way that you and I ought to be. It's just the human condition to have fear. But we can go to the Lord and we can have peace. We can have courage in the face of trouble. Let it come in spades as long as we have God. And when you read David's life, one time, two times, three times, four times, five times, six times, seven times, eight times, nine times, 10 times, 11 times, minimum. Saul tried to assassinate him. And God protected him. And God will protect you as long as you're in the will of Almighty God.